friends. Happy Monday. Sam Rutkowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. President Oprah Winfrey, so crowned by the Hollywood elites last night during the completely insufferable Golden Globe ceremony. So, if you do not live under a rock, you're aware that Oprah gave a speech yesterday. You're also probably aware that all of Hollywood, in fact, many people perhaps that you know that are, you know, just regular folks, but smitten with the concept of anyone but Trump, have gone all in behind Oprah's non-announcement announcement. So her speech had nothing, by the way, to do with I'm running for president or here's my platform. It was all about the Me Too movement, which how tired is that? I mean, how at this point, it's a Me Too, Me Too. It's like, you know, third hand. And here's a woman who, I mean, cavorted with the founding godfather of abuse, Harvey Weinstein. I mean, the whole thing's absurd, top to bottom. But I absolutely am tickled with this, by this characterization that that if in the room, if there had been a vote right then and there in the room, in the the hall where the Golden Globes were held, all the fawning members of the press and Hollywood elites and their various hangers-on, if there had been a vote in that room, by God, they would have elected her president right then and there. And my response to that is, yeah, so what? That same room would have elected Hillary Clinton president. They did. They all voted for Hillary. The problem is the rest of the country didn't. Ergo, she lost. Let me tell you an anecdote that I think frames this really nicely, because it is relevant to a lot of the criticism out there right now of Trump, that he's a buffoon, that he chugs 12 Diet Cokes a day, that he eats nothing but Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's. The man, basically, it's like a dog whistle if he sees the Golden Arches. Well, I know I'm going back a little bit in history, but do you remember the story of Oprah and the Hermes store? Now, for those of you who do not know what or who Hermes is, let me quickly tell you, it's a very, very high-end luxury boutique with things that none of us can afford. It's like $40,000 purses. In fact, she was on her way there. This was in France, in Paris, Rue de Faubourg. They do not have any resettled migrants on Rue de Faubourg. This is a very trendy street. And Hermes would be the creme de la creme. That's French, in case you didn't know. Creme de la creme of high-end retail, right? And so she goes to the store, and she's late. She gets there past closing. It's 6:30, so she gets there, 6:31, 6:35, whatever it is. It's not too far past closing time, but it's closing time nonetheless. And she is there with her whole entourage. I don't know if that included Gail King or not, but her whole entourage is there and knocking on the door. Let me in. I want to buy. And they had none of it. Because Hermes, being a 170-year institution, doesn't give a rat's rear end about Oprah Winfrey or any other celebrity. They're bigger than celebrity status. This is a company, by the way, that whatever they don't sell, they burn. Do you know this? They don't resell. No. There's no outlet or anything like that. They just burn it. That's how much they care about their brand. So Oprah made a big stink about it and called it racism. Somebody in her camp called it, her crash moment. Referring to the movie, you know, where there was all interactions were inherently, you know, tainted by racist behaviors and attitudes. So you have a woman who wants to be president to take the presidency away from a guy who munches on cheeseburgers on his private jet, A lady that's banging down the door over at Hermes wanting to buy $40,000 purses, yelling at everybody about how important she is and how powerful she is, and do you know who I am? You know, it's interesting to me. It's a lot of what the criticism is about Trump is actually tremendously endearing to the American public, and it is completely over the heads of all these goofballs out there. All of these dummies in the press, all these dummies in Hollywood, all of these, hedge fund, multimillionaire liberals do not understand Trump's appeal. They fundamentally have missed the boat on it. And in that sense, by all means, bring on a candidate Oprah. What an interesting matchup that would be. Because at the end, I think her pretentiousness would come through very quickly. Very quickly. And do you remember how many? You say because she has a following. She's got a lot of women that tune into her, that type of thing. Let me answer that. Do you remember when she went all in for Barack Obama? This is, 9 years ago, all in supporting Obama's presidency. And she lost so many viewers. She lost so many women who were, middle America people who wanted to listen to her talk about books, give away cars and that type of insipid stuff. But as soon as she got political and supported a radical guy and a leftist agenda, nobody wanted to have any part of it. It was a turnoff. And I think that's, I think that's what you risk with that kind of crossover. Anyway. But what you'll really have, the setup once again is going to be out of touch elitist versus the self-styled blue collar billionaire. So I think it's fascinating to me. Oh, Roseanne also has chimed in. She says, I'd be a better president than Oprah. So you've got that going for her. She's going to have competition. I'm telling you, the race in 2020, as far as Democrats are concerned, is wide open. It's going to be a killing field. There are so many Democrats that are convinced. You know why? Because there are so many Democrats that are convinced that Trump is beatable, that this is a race that is decided in the primary. I think they're nuts. But I think that there's going to be a flourish, a school of candidates coming out of the woodwork on the Democratic side. A lot of money, too. Tom Steyer is that him? No, who's the billion? There's a guy who's going to invest, I just read, $30 million into switching the makeup of the House. There's going to be a lot of money in the 2018 race. There's going to be a lot of money in 2020. Trust me, a lot of people coming out of the woodwork. But I wonder this there's a hashtag trending. I'm with her again. This is a play on Hillary Clinton's campaign slogan. And people are now declaring their allegiance to President-elect Oprah Winfrey. How cast aside would you feel if you're Hillary? Those are all your people there in Hollywood. Those are your people. I mean, it was 2 years ago. You were the toast of the town. And just like that, that old windbag gives one speech about hashtag me too. And you're chopped liver. Interesting stuff. Now, meanwhile, there's a lot brewing. The 25th Amendment. So what the narrative in this book, what's the 25th Amendment? This is the last Custer's last stand for the Never Trump movement. Now, this is the last thing they've got. I'll dig up something from a bag of tricks here from the past. Let's see. Where do I have this? There is a David Plouffe. You know who David Plouffe is? He's a Democrat Party strategist. And he, all the way back in June of 2016, said it is not enough to simply beat Trump. He must be destroyed thoroughly. His kind must not rise again. You remember this? I shared it with you all the way back then. And it was relevant because this was during the campaign. Of course, it was not enough that Trump just lose. He had to be destroyed. And they have tried everything. This 25th Amendment business, declaring the president a mental incompetent, right? This is part of the narrative that is being pushed in the Wolf book. And all over CNN, CNN has turned into a 24/7 mental health clinic for President Trump. And so I'm just telling you, it's the last stand. It is the last stand of theirs because the first thing you're gonna, Trump Russia collusion that happened immediately after the election. You had all sorts of criticisms about Trump from the get-go, but they're going through individual things, trying to find anything and everything to turn this election upside down, to invalidate the election result. And I have a question. Why not just fight him on the issues? I mean, doesn't that seem like a far more successful strategy? We are a democracy. Elections, believe it or not, for the most part, are decided on ideas. So if you think he's such an abhorrent and horrible person, by virtue of that, you've got to assume that it's because you don't like his positions, right? You don't like his positions. Maybe it's his come over, but you don't like his positions. Argue with the man, argue with his people on the merits of his positions. But they don't want to do it. They don't want to get into it. They don't want to. It all comes back down to this insane narrative. I heard the book. I mean, really, the book that's out right now, if Trump had just ignored it and let it be, it would already be yesterday's news. The only place they'd be talking about it is on Morning Joe and on Jake Tapper's program. That's it. That's the only two places where this book would even be discussed. Going toe to toe on this book has just been a pointless sideshow. And the reason for it is, and there's a great piece, friends, in the New York Times. I can't even believe it's coming from the New York Times. It's by David Brooks. And David Brooks, of course, is a proudly declared anti-Trumper. But he mentions, he calls it the invisible White House. He mentions something in his piece that I have been telling you for weeks, if not months. And that is that while everybody is distracted with the caricature of Trump, by the caricature of the Trump White House, we'll put it this way, by everything that's in that Michael Wolff book, all the salaciousness, all the incredible stories of infighting, of insanity, of a president 6:30 p.m. in bed munching on cheeseburgers, yelling at the cable news shows that are on his TV. That White House is not the real White House. Turns out there's this, and David Brooks calls it, and I like his term, I'll borrow it, the invisible White House. And the invisible White House is the one that's getting everything done and quietly turning the country around. And he is a liberal warrior. Hey, while we're all distracted by the sideshow, and he calls it the Potemkin White House, the tweeting, some of the pronouncements, these things that are coming out in various books, they're just distractions. And the press is chasing them down alleys that they don't even need to be going down. And meanwhile, Trump is plodding ahead, and the White House is very successfully, by the way, moving forward his agenda. Now, he makes three observations. I only got to share this with you because it's I've always said this. So one of his observations is people who go into the White House to have a meeting with President Trump usually leave pleasantly surprised. They find that Trump is not the raving madman they expected from his tweet storms. They generally say he's affable, if repetitive. He runs a normal, good meeting and seems well informed enough to get by. So that's not what we're told, right? He's not a guy that's sitting there not repeating. I mean, repetitive. Yeah, you know that he's repetitive because he's the guy that goes, does these rallies. You've seen it. It's the same theme. It's the same simple sentence. It's the same programming. But I've mentioned that's part of his It's programming. It's what he does. He sticks to something and he repeats it over and over again. It's not a sign of mental illness. But the other thing, and he says, well, his second point was something about the people within the White House have very different opinions of Trump. There's some people that loathe him and some people that love him, and everything in between. And I've told you that's a function of bringing in a lot of outsiders. A lot of people that went in loathing Trump, they still loathe him. They don't love that their entire Republican establishment world has been turned upside down. But it's the third thing I want to get at, because this is what leads now to the invisible White House. If you're a liberal, if you do not like Trump, be very worried about this third item that David Brooks talks about. I got to go to a quick break. I'll tell you what that is when we come back. I'm just saying, there's real stuff happening, and you all are, the press is just chasing a can that's tied behind a car going to the wrong place. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
News, talk, evolve. 790 KBC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Happy Monday. So, David Brooks, writing in the New York Times of all places, is beginning to realize that anti-Trumpism needs to get smart. He starts this piece, well, he calls the piece "The Decline of Anti-Trumpism." Let me start with three inconvenient observations based on dozens of conversations around Washington over the past year. The first two I shared with you, people come to see the president, they're surprised. Even people that don't like him, that go in thinking they've got this caricature in their mind of a raving lunatic, and they come away from the meeting and they're like, wow, that guy's got his stuff together. And by the way, he's actually pleasant and seems to be focused. The second observation was people have different views of their boss. You have the types of people making comments to Michael Wolff in his book, saying, you know, Trump's a crazy guy and he's, you know, done this, that, and the other. But those are people that have their agendas. You got to be careful. And by the way, my impression of the Michael Wolff book, and now's as good a time as any to say this, is that people came in with their agendas, with very biased statements that were obvious to anyone, for anyone to see what their biases were and what they were trying to do. And Michael Wolff took them all at their face value, right? He doesn't, when I read excerpts of this book, he doesn't look to say, well, you know, but consider the source and here I've got a contradiction. None of that. It's almost like you just went in and vacuumed up a bunch of rumors, a bunch of backbiting BS, put it in the book because it's salacious and it's going to sell. And he hates Trump. So not good journalism. But the third thing that David Brooks writes here is why there's a decline in anti-Trumpism. He says why we should be worried, at least, is as anti-Trumpists. The White House, he writes, is getting more professional. Imagine if Trump didn't tweet. The craziness of the past weeks would be out of the way. And we would see a White House that is briskly pursuing its goals. He starts naming them. The shift in our Pakistan policy. Offshore drilling. ISIS. Nomination of judgeships and the formation of policies on infrastructure, DACA, North Korea, and trade. And that's just to name a few. See what's going on? Trump sends out 8 tweets. I wake up in the morning and there it is, right there. Notifications on Twitter. And I see that the Trumpster's been at it. But then everybody in the press, all those people that even when you try, you can't get away from, even if you don't want to watch CNN, there it is. It's going to pop up somewhere. And you're going to hear about Jake Tapper. And you're going to hear about Jim Acosta and all these losers. And they're all following Trump's tweets. You know? They're like panting dogs. No, they're like dogs in heat. No, really, it's like that. And then they chase it throughout for 24 hours. They chase it. And meanwhile, Trump's reinventing America. Thank goodness. He's doing the things that I wanted him to do when I voted for him. And you know what I know? You know what that tells me? You know the takeaway there? And listen to me. If I am the only person you know that you hear talking positively about Trump, let me be a window into Trumpverse for you. Because I see Trump doing quietly the things that he promised to do. I see Trump fulfilling his campaign promises. I see his actions matching his rhetoric. And so what does that do? What does that do for me with my relationship to the candidate if he comes back in 2020? I'm going to vote for him again. It's going to be the opposite effect that Schwarzenegger had. If you all remember Schwarzenegger, he got up and he gave that speech and he said, we wake up and we're taxed. We do this and we're taxed. We get in the cars and we're taxed. And everybody goes, yeah, that's right. That's right. And you go there. And then Schwarzenegger went to Sacramento and promptly soiled his diaper. And the rest is history. And then we didn't want him anymore. I mean, that's simply put how it all went down. Year in, I don't see any of that coming from Trump. And so guess what? In out there, outside of the Golden Globes, outside of the golden spires of the Capitol, New York and Santa Monica, no one gives a crap about the Potemkin White House. Nobody gives a crap about what he tweets. They just care about the action. And they like the action. Trust me. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. John Wolf up next with the news.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. Rarely wrong and always right. By the way, speaking of In-N-Out, you know that the new hot chocolate on the menu is being promoted. This is just a public service announcement. Okay, if you've got kids and would like to use your children for something for profit, I'm not talking about human trafficking. I'm just saying if you want to profit off of your children, make them earn back some of their keep, take them to In-N-Out and you'll get free hot chocolate with a kid on a rainy day. So if it's a rainy day and you're in the presence of a minor, you can get some free hot chocolate. It can be any minor. I don't think you have to come in with a birth certificate confirming your parentage. I think you can. Robbie, if you'd like to borrow any one of my three kids, you need some hot cocoa in your life tomorrow. I think it's still supposed to rain, so you can. I don't know if Sherry's listening right now and thinks I'm giving away my kids so you can get hot chocolate. Not how I meant it, but kind of is. Anyway, just read here that a top Democrat donor, somebody named Susie Tompkins Buell, has told the New York Times she's thinking about cutting off donations to the senators who called on Al Franken to quit. I'm with her on that. I've said it a number of times here. I think it was premature to oust Franken from the Senate. I don't like Franken. I don't like his policies. I think he's a goober and a goofball and not a serious person, which, of course, is true because he's a comedian and should never have been allowed in the Senate. But it's not for me to decide. It's for the good people of his home state. And so in Minnesota, they wanted him. Hey, what am I supposed to do about that? And I want to always, and this is back to, you know, even what I was saying earlier with the media trying to declare Trump unfit. And I think it's a cheap shot because I would always rather level my opponent with facts. I would rather have my ideas beat their ideas. This is just how I roll and how we ought to be as a movement. And conservatives always should fight this way. And this is one of the principal things. This is why the Me Too movement is so yesterday's news already. And this is why Oprah is never going to win as president, because she takes her, you know, her 5 minutes or whatever it was that she has up there on stage and talks about girl power and talks about never again will this happen. Talking about sexual abuse of women and such. It's already yesterday's news, and it's yesterday's news because it's been abused. It's already being abused to eliminate people that perhaps, you know, deserve some due process, gosh forbid. Okay? When you start to see top Democratic Party donors saying, whoa, 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 what happened over there? Not cool. And this one day after Oprah gets up there and, you know, hashtags Me Too all over herself. And, you know, everybody goes, oh, my God, Oprah, I love you. I love you, my baby. Oh. No. It's, you know, oh, yeah, this is, no. The guy who wins elections, by the way, is the guy who stands up and says things and leaves everyone slack-jawed, right? Build a wall. NAFTA, kill it. Minimum wage, meh, not important. Drilling in the Arctic, yeah, sure, let's just grind up the caribou. Right? I mean, that, you know, because we are starved for authenticity. That's part of this underlying the Trump phenomenon is authenticity. And when you had for 8 years, we had an eloquent guy there, you know, so-called eloquent guy who spoke in vapid, you know, empty platitudes. You reading, you know, I mean, if you wanted to be put to sleep, if you wanted to have a, I don't know, and if you didn't want to use propofol before your surgery, you could have read, you know, Obama's Twitter account. It would put you to sleep. Total Z's. Well, Trump's using his Twitter account to just get all the people agitated out there. Meanwhile, the agenda goes forward. All right. Me too. It's history. You heard it here. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790. KABC.
Sam Rogowski here for my friend, my attorney, sweet James Bergner. Look, this guy, he's the original, right? He's the California attorney that everybody loves. Well, maybe not everybody. The insurance companies don't love him because he's busy taking the fight to them and burning them down to the ground for you to get you the results that you deserve. You don't want to go into a battle like that alone, right? You get into an accident, you get hurt, your head is spinning, you don't know what to do. You're just, I don't want to deal with this. The phone calls are coming in. Don't handle it alone. You're not in it alone. Get James and his team to be on your side. Super easy to call. 800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Remember that number. Because you never know when you'll need him. But when you do, you'll want him in your corner. And by the way, everybody there, super easy to talk to, friendly. Over $400 million collected for their clients over the last 14 years. Also, whatever you do, the consultations are always free, so you don't have to worry about paying anything up front. All that comes at the end. Very reasonable. 800-881-2021. Sweet James. Oh, he's got a website, too. SweetJames.com. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. You know, I'm just going to return briefly to that article I was mentioning. David Brooks in the New York Times writing about the decline of anti-Trumpism. And he's, as a guy on the inside, right, he calls himself a devoted anti-Trumpist. And, of course, being with the New York Times and such, he is an East Coast liberal. And he says, after he describes this phenomenon of the Potemkin White House, the tweeting, kind of crazy, everything seems off kilter White House that is talked about every day in the press. There's this other White House that is the invisible White House, and that's the White House that's getting things done. And that's what has him worried the most. He writes in this article, I love this. This is what I've been telling you all along, right? You've heard me talk about this. That the press is distracted by all this noise. Meanwhile, the Trump agenda, the Make America Great agenda, is moving forward. Listen to this. This is David Brooks writing. I wonder sometimes if the invisible White House has learned to use the Potemkin White House to deke us while it changes the country. Now, deke means to fool us or to throw us off course. Duke, is that how you... Anyway, my ESL moment here. This is what I've been saying. This is exactly it. I wonder if the White House, the invisible White House, is playing us, right? Is playing us, right? They're using the Potemkin White House to distract us, to throw us off the scent. I mention these things because the anti-Trump movement, of which I'm a proud member, writes Brooks, seems to be getting dumber. It seems to be settling into a smug fairy tale version of reality that filters out discordant information. The narrative is Trump is a semi-literate madman surrounded by sycophants who are morally, intellectually, and psychologically inferior to people like us. Exactly. And then he talks about Wolf, right? The guy who wrote the book that everybody's talking about right now. Wolf doesn't pretend to adhere to normal journalistic standards. He happily admits that he's just tossing out rumors that are too good to check. Exactly. Now, I get it. Now, it's a good business for him because there's so many people that want to buy into this alternate reality. They want to believe that Trump is foaming at the mouth. They want to believe that he's about to be tossed. You know, these are the same people that on election night were tears flowing down their face. They had just been pimp slapped by reality. They thought Hillary was going to, you know, steal this thing, you know, 12, 13, 15 points. There are people calling this race, you know, weeks before it was done. And when it happened, it all goes back to the original lie of what was happening with the polls. It all goes back to the original lie with the media. The media created a world where everyone thought Hillary would win. And so sure were they that a year later, they still can't wrap their heads around it. They still need a fairy tale to get them through. And the fairy tale that's getting them through is this whole concept that we're going to find a way to get rid of him. It's the 25th Amendment. He's going to be declared insane. Or we're going to, you know, have him trotted out of the White House by Mueller in handcuffs and the FBI, whatever it is. We're going to get rid of him. There's no way this thing is going to go the entire length. All right, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
News, talk, evolve. Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
All right. Before we go to the news here, let me ask you a question first. Are you a nervous flyer? And let me ask you a second question. If you're a nervous flyer, why are you nervous? Right? What what makes you a nervous flyer? Because I think for most people, it's sort of this irrational thing. I mean, they can't make any sense of it. It's just being not in control, right? You're up there, you're inside of an aluminum tube, hurtling through space. It's just not a fun thing. By the way, Sam Rojofsky here, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. For others, I'm actually a nervous flyer. I became a nervous flyer because I was on a Delta flight once that lost an engine. And it's not like when you lose your keys and you can't find them. And you have to retrace your steps. It wasn't like that. The engine was still on the plane. I just mean it stopped working. And it stopped working. I happened to be in the bathroom. And so I was in this, you know, the bathroom's enclosed space. And you hear noise in the bathroom a little bit differently than you do at your seat. And all of a sudden, I was just there doing my thing. And I heard a... And the plane, it got noticeably quieter. And ever since then, I've been a little bit uneasy. Anyway, everything turned out great, obviously. Now, there's a great story that came out New Year's Day. Jet Airways, which is an Indian carrier out of India. Their slogan is the joy of flying. They had an in-flight incident that I think would scare the you-know-what out of you. And here's what went down. suddenly during flight, the female captain, right, the pilot in charge, ran out of the cockpit in tears. Now, what had happened was, is her male subordinate, the co-pilot on the flight, the junior officer, slapped her. You know, I can't make this up. No, this is... So, he got into an argument, and he slapped her. And her reaction as the commanding officer of that flight was to run out of the cockpit in tears. So, you know what happened next, right? Well, what do you think happened? The passengers at the front of the plane are flipping out because they see their captain in tears running out of the cockpit. They see the flight attendants coalesce around this lady and we're encouraging her to go to the cockpit, go back into the cockpit. Then, can you, it gets even better. Then the guy, the co-pilot gets out of the cockpit too. Yeah, million-dollar question. Who the hell's flying the plane? And they're having this talk, and, you know, I am not going to do a recreation of it in an Indian accent. But I guarantee you this thing was just grotesque to watch. And, I mean, the passengers, by the way, based on this story here in the New York Post, this is a Boeing 777. There were 324 passengers on board and 14 crew members. And here they are slapping each other. Crazy. I don't know if that would make you nervous. Certainly would me. When we come back, I want to get into this interview. Everyone is talking about it. It's been totally mischaracterized. This is the interview on CNN yesterday. Jake Tapper versus Steve Miller. Now, I'll tell you who the players are and all this stuff, but there's something very important here. I've got a couple great clips. Don't want to miss this. You'll know everything about it when the dust settles. All right, we got John Wolfe up next with the news. Don't go anywhere.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790 KABC.
Yes, yes, yes. Sam Rujofsky, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC, 8:04 p.m. Monday night. I finally will get around to giving a phone number, 800-222-5222. That is not Sweet James' phone number. That is my phone number if you'd like to be on the program. Sam at samnation.com is my email. Send all the love letters there. Or to the station. You can also just contact KBC directly and tell them how much you hate me. Yeah, they've got a nice round receptacle for those. Anyway, no, I get to see them too. I treasure hate mail over all mail. Although I had a listener, Betsy, tweet at me here earlier in the show that she had her little niece, I believe it was her little niece or granddaughter, but she had her little niece on in the car and was crying and fussy, this little girl. And all she had to do was turn on the Sam Nation podcast and it put her right to sleep. Well, not sleep. No, hold on. Now I'm not. Now I'm. Hold on. I'm going to get right to the source here. Here's what she writes. Oh, I'm stumbling around. Here we go. On the way home tonight, my one-year-old daughter wouldn't stop crying. There, I got the whole story wrong. Nothing helped. Music, singing, snacks. Finally, I turned on my Sam Nation podcast, and she was instantly quiet and relaxed the rest of the ride. And she's super cute. You ought to see this kid. So on Twitter, at Sam Nation, is where you can find that. Also, remember, if you missed a show, you got the podcast. Remember, we do that every night. Producer Robbie goes home to his grotto and using some sort of a, I think he, don't you etch that on a copper disc? Isn't that how you make that, do that podcast? You would think, folks, that it was a copper disc etching based on how long it takes him to put it up. Well, I don't know what you do in there. But anyway, it goes up usually within a couple hours after the show. So we try to keep it fresh, try to keep it current, and keep it, most importantly, accessible to you, our faithful listeners. We love you and appreciate you. Now, One of the big news stories today has been this interview on CNN that Jake Tapper did with Stephen Miller. Now, Stephen Miller is Trump's Wunderkind. That's a German word that we've adopted in the English language to mean wonder child or some young person who is, by virtue of their talent and ability, far and away ahead of his or her time. Well, anyway, this guy is one of Trump's speechwriters. He's also Stephen Miller is a guy who's worked on policy. I mean, he's definitely Make America Great Again to the core, to the death. And he's been with the campaign for quite a long time. Anyway, so Tapper has him on. And what Tapper tells him, this is very important. Tapper says, I want to talk about this weekend. I want to talk about some of the things that were discussed with the Republican leadership at Camp David, because Trump went. Well, meanwhile, we're all talking about the book, right? The book is, you know, Trump's insane. But meanwhile, he was quietly hosting up at Camp David the presidential retreat, House leadership, Senate leadership, and crafting the Republican Party agenda for the year moving forward. So, yeah, sure, Trump's insane. Yeah, sure, Trump's feuding with McConnell. Yeah, sure, Trump hates Paul Ryan. But they're all on a little junket getaway planning how they're going to ruin liberals' lives next year or this year. So he's brought on, Steve Miller is brought on to talk about this. And instead, all Tapper wants to talk about is the book. All Tapper wants to talk about is Trump being insane. So here, I'll give you a little flavor of it. And listen, most importantly, to how Tapper ends his clip here, because it concluded a particular segment. Well, listen to this.
You have President, 24 hours of negative anti-Trump hysterical coverage on this network that led in recent weeks to some spectacularly embarrassing false reporting.
I think the viewers
from your network
right now can ascertain who's being hysterical.
The viewers are entitled to have 3 months of the truth. Why don't you just give me 3 minutes to tell you the truth about Donald Trump that I know and then all of our campaign staff
know? Because it's my show and I don't want to do that.
Well, of course he doesn't want to do that. Of course Jake Tapper says it's my show and I don't want to do that. Meh. Of course, because he wants to push a narrative. That, by the way, he did not intend to say. This interview, I saw it described. Daily Mail ran a piece about this thing, calling it a car crash interview. And the way it was phrased in the headline, and I don't have it here in my stack of stuff, but the way it was put together in the headline intimated to me, and I hadn't seen the interview yet, but suggested to me that Steve Miller went on and made a clown out of himself. And I think the reason I picked it up there was because that's sort of how it was portrayed on Twitter. That's sort of how it was portrayed, some of the drive-by media talking about it. That's how it was put out there. And so I, you know, thinking that, I assumed that the thing was a tragedy. And a lot of, for Miller, that the you know, Trump guy got creamed. So doing show prep today, I go on and I look at the interview. I watch it. And what I see, like this particular, first of all, Miller remained calm the entire time. I mean, I would have strangled Tapper 100%. But he remained really calm. In fact, his eyes were kind of half open. He just was very, very matter of fact, but firm. In that clip is really, and I'll play another one here in a second, it really is the loudest that he got. He didn't become agitated. He didn't get the crazy eye. He didn't start, you know, he didn't have a Scaramucci, you know, type moment. This is all very matter of fact. So if you've heard it mischaracterized, your ears did not deceive you. I listened to it. I was waiting for the car crash. There's no car crash here. But that tell right there, that little ending there, well, he says, look, I just want to tell you about the Trump that I know. You're calling him mentally unstable. You're citing all the stuff in the book. I've been with him. I was there during the campaign. I've been with Trump for 2 years. Why don't you ask me what I think about Trump? And Tapper says, well, it's my show, and I don't want to do that. See how the mainstream media works? These are the people that perhaps you at some point in your life thought you could trust. You went to them. Maybe before you came to this program, you were under the false assumption. And I don't blame you because, you know, it's life is hard in the dark. But you probably believe that CNN, for the most part, likes to tell the truth. You know what Miller is referring to, and this is part of it. Miller, instead of going on there and playing kind of Tapper's game and answering his questions, he decided he was going to take a stand. Now, the mainstream media doesn't like that. They don't like when we take a stand. They want to run with their narrative. They have a preconceived narrative of where they're going. And the stand that Miller wanted to take was, look, let me tell you who my boss is. And by the way, we think that you're garbage. We literally think that your show is garbage. And we know that you guys get it wrong. And he was referring, by the way, there's back in, do you remember this December 8th? CNN reported that Donald Trump Jr. and a few other people in the Trump organization got an email days before the WikiLeaks dump detailing what those WikiLeaks documents were. It's a big deal. It would show that Trump and his people were colluding. We love that word, right? Colluding with WikiLeaks, getting a preview of bad stuff. And you see, WikiLeaks being the people that released the Hillary emails. We're working with Trump. You see? And they probably got those emails from Russia. And they ran with the story. They ran with it for a few days until they realized that, no, the email, the smoking gun email, was actually sent on a wrong day. They didn't bother to check when the email was sent. The email from inside the Trump organization was sent after this information was publicly released. So they were just reacting to stuff that they'd seen in the news. No big deal. And so he challenged it. Things like this happening over and over again. You know, the three journalists, you remember them back in June? They ran a false CNN story about Scaramucci. They got, you know, the Trump dossier was linked by CNN. I mean, CNN has been in the forefront of screwing up very big stories. Gotten it wrong time and time again. And the answer from the media is, well, it's my show. I'm going to do it the way I want to. And another answer from the media is, well, this is just how journalism works. This is just how you do it. Fascinating thing. About a month ago when that December story ran, David Frum, who's the editor of The Atlantic, was talking about this with Brian Stelter and Reliable Sources on CNN. And Stelter asks Frum about this. Like, what do you do when these, you know, when we get it wrong? Like, what advice do you have to the public? You and I, they're talking. This is, what advice do you have for Sam, when he watches CNN and they totally lie in a news story? Listen to this.
David, what's your advice for journalists in this situation and for readers?
I have more advice for readers. You asked the question, Brian, why should, given these mistakes, why should people trust the media? And I would say the mistakes are precisely the reason that people should trust the media. Look, journalism is a process. The way you discover the truth as a consumer of news is not by reading any one story and thinking, aha, here's the truth. You have to be engaged in it. You have to be an active consumer because this is, unlike law enforcement, which investigates and produces conclusions at the end, journalists show their work as they go. They approximate the truth.
They lie, I think, is what he's trying to say. And by the way, as a lawyer, I'll tell you right now, okay, law enforcement comes to a conclusion at the end, which is frequently wrong, okay? And the idea that everybody goes into it with their biases, and CNN, this is a cover-up of a cover-up, right? The idea that CNN, it's just approximating the truth, they're trying to get near it, is not the case. The biggest takeaway from this Jake Tapper Miller, car crash interview, quote unquote, is Tapper admitting it's my show, I don't want to do it. I don't want to report on the truth. I don't care who the real Donald Trump is. It's my show, and I don't want to do that. Now, the explosive ending got a lot of coverage. Now, you heard, I think, if you watch the mainstream media, if you listen to the mainstream news, you heard that Miller was dragged from the studios by security and had to be thrown out of the building. I was picturing that. How do you picture that? Well, the reality would happen is he wanted to keep going after the interview. And there's a transcript of it. It's just some back and forth. It's a live show. They're coming out of a commercial break. And somebody basically said, all right, pal, you got to go. And he leaves of his own accord. But anyway, here is how the interview ends. Listen to this. You tell me what you think of this.
President
Jake,
of the White
House. Reason why I want to talk about the president's experiences, what I've seen with him traveling to meet dozens of foreign leaders, with his incredible work.
Okay, you're not answering the questions.
No,
I understand.
You have 24 hours a day of anti-Trump material.
You're
not going to give 3 minutes for the American people to hear the real experience of Donald Trump.
There's one viewer that you care about right now, and you're being obsequious.
You're being a factotum in order
to please him, okay?
I think I've wasted enough of my viewers' time.
Thank you, Stephen. As Republicans, lawmakers call for Attorney General Jeff Sessions to resign, in a major reversal, Democrats are now coming to his defense.
Okay, cut it. And then they cut his off his audio. See, I love that. Have you ever been interviewed? If you ever been interviewed by somebody who has an agenda, they've got... Oh, by the way, the number one trick that the media uses is they lure you into the interview. They tell you, hey, we're going to ask you about X, Y, and Z. And then they want to talk about ABC. They Shanghai you, right? And that's what happened here, number one. Number two, they're asking about, think about this. They're asking about salacious, unfounded allegations from a guy who even the mainstream media has called a journalistic con artist, Michael Wolff. They're asking a guy who has actually been there, who was in the White House, who knows Steve Bannon, who knows Corey Lewandowski, who knows Donald Trump Jr., who knows the president, who's been there every step of the way. They're asking him about what's written in the book. And when he begins to tell them what his opinion is of Trump, and it happens to be flattering, they don't want to hear it. So again, the takeaway from the interview is the modus operandi of the mainstream media, of CNN, Jake Tapper in particular, but this extends to every clown over there. And I've got a few more clips here after the break I'll get into of other people crowing about it. About everything going on, you'll see that their MO is narrative first. There is no interest in journalism. There's no interest in integrity. There's no interest in anything other than advancing their agenda. They're devoted, 100% devoted leftists. And to them, a conservative agenda advanced by a conservative president is unthinkable. And everything else, all these other things, Trump is insane and Trump is a lunatic and he eats cheeseburgers and whatever the hell else they have they don't like. All of that is irrelevant. But it's the agenda that they want to get across because they don't want to see him succeed. All right. Don't go anywhere. More on this when we come back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790. KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, we're speaking about the Jake Tapper interview that occurred yesterday, Sunday, on CNN's State of the Union address, or show, excuse me. Quite a confrontation. I mean, I don't necessarily think a car wreck, as it was described by some in the media, but it does show, in my opinion, it's exhibitive of their of CNN's bias, right? They've got an agenda; they're pushing it. Now, not everybody agrees with this. Well, do we have Val? Val in Los Angeles? Val, are you here? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Val, welcome to the program. Great to have you.
Thank you. So, I don't agree with that, Sam. Well, excuse me, let me clarify that. It's not that I don't agree with that point. It's just that you yourself are exhibiting your inherent biases toward that particular cable news channel, because I don't hear you saying that same thing about Fox, and that's Fox's signature. They ought to send Fox a check for borrowing that technique, because that's all they do on any of their interview shows.
Well, let me answer that, because I actually I think you raise a really good point, Val, and I'm glad that you've called in. First of all, with Sam Nation, this program is an opinion show. I'm speaking for myself, and I am giving my opinion, and I always want to give my own opinion, and I don't pretend to be unbiased. Fox is an interesting amalgam of different programming, in my opinion. I'm giving my opinion right now. I think there are programs on Fox that are news programs, and then there are opinion programs. So I am with you 100%. A show like Hannity, okay? Sean Hannity is kind of, I don't know. It's really not even my thing. I'm not a huge Hannity guy. Although he's a nice guy, don't love his show. And that's because it's just rah, 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 rah without, you know, any, I criticize it for some lack of substance. But it is 100% an opinion program. I believe X. I think Y, right? And then you've got news programs on there, which either provide a balance of views. Well, one would be an example, that would be The Five. Or you have people like, you know, Shep Smith, who are, by the way, Shep's a liberal, a big time liberal. I mean, this is not a, I mean, people know that knew that about him even before they knew he was gay. All right. So you've got people on Fox who are play it more journalistically middle of the road. CNN, Jake Tapper, all these shows, they're supposed to be, what is CNN's tagline, right? They're the most trusted name in news. I know you're going to tell me Fox is, you know, fair and balanced. Fair and balanced implies that there's people on both sides, which I actually can make an argument that Fox is doing, it does do. But CNN plays the straight card. And Jake Tapper, I'm going to tell you right now, he definitely pretends to be middle of the road, you know, reasonable, like non-ideologue. It's the shows. And this is, so Val raised, and thank you so much, Val, for coming on the program. I really appreciate the phone call. Val's point is so true, is it, and I understand that people feel this way about Fox, and I understand that people feel this way about talk radio. I get it. But Jake Tapper is not Rachel Maddow. Rachel Maddow and MSNBC comes out and says, I'm a lib, and this is my opinion, and I hate Trump, and da-da-da. Okay, fine. I respect that. I'm not complaining about Rachel Maddow. Certainly I play clips of her and, you know, go to town on her logic. But she's not Trump pretending to be a journalist. CNN are a bunch of posers. Poser losers. All they do is go on, pretend to be, you know, the most trusted name in news. And that's why, by the way, Val, you heard that From and Stelter interview. I mean, you know that clip that I played earlier? David, what's your advice for journalists in this situation? From, I have more advice for readers. And they talk about journalism. They are calling themselves journalists. That's the takeaway from that clip. They think of themselves as journalists. But when you strip away that pretend veneer that they put on, that fakery, what's underneath? Bias, opinion, and that's it. Just be honest about it. But CNN won't do that. Okay, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KBC. John Wolf up next with the news.
Call now. Call me if you're interested.
What's your phone number?
800-ABC-KABC.
Ask for the phone number, not the phone letters.
That's 800-222-5222.
Thank you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC, 837 in the West. And we are coming to you loud and clear from the Sweet James Studios, deep behind the orange curtain. All right. Thankfully, Sherry has just come through and sent me pictures of the puppies. I get periodically photos during the day of our new puppies. This is mostly an effort for me to verify that they're still alive. They appear to be. I should have them hold a copy of the newspaper, you know, kind of like they do as a proof of life when you've been kidnapped. The only problem is I'd have to find a newspaper I actually want to subscribe to. And I would get the New York Times just for them to piss on it, you know? But no, we buy pee pads for that. At any rate, all right. The media, I'm telling you, the media is so ecstatic. They are gushing over this anti-Trump book. Trust me on this. Katie Tour, she had Michael Wolff on, and Michael Wolff really does, you almost think that he's somewhere in the Middle Earth looking for his precious ring. He looks Gollum-esque, I'm telling you. So he's like sitting there in the chair and he's looking all eagle-eyed. He's got these big eyes and he's just like so excited, right? He's got his 10 seconds of fame. All right, Katie Tour. It's got Michael Wolff in the studio, and she's doing this is kind of signing off here a little bit. Listen to this.
Michael Wolff, it is a fascinating book. Fire and Fury. As you can see, I did read it. Congratulations on the book, and congratulations on the president hating it.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time, sir.
Oh, that's so cute. Liberal lovin'. You know, every good myth requires perpetuation, right? Requires symbiosis of that myth being passed along. And so the best thing to do with that is to get two people in a room, like they did here at MSNBC, that both share the same vision of who Trump ought to be. And that caricature, again, it's the same thing. Can you hear her happiness? Can you hear her gushing? Michael Wolff, it is a fascinating book. I mean, she sounds like she's going to burst. As you can see, I did read it, and she thumbs through. You can hear the little rustling of the pages, and you see the book, and it has been annotated. As you can see, I read it. You know, this is kind of like when the missionaries showed up somewhere with Bibles. I read it, Father John. I did. Oh, salvation is mine. The Church of Anti-Trump is the new religion of the left. I almost feel bad for Al Gore getting left out in the cold, proverbially speaking, because the Church of Global Warming has some empty pews right now, mostly because people are stuck in the frickin' snow. But it's been replaced, right? Do you hear so much about climate? You don't hear anything about global warming anymore. Or climate change, excuse me. Passé term. But the new ideology of the left, the new gospel of the commie pinkos that have dominated the American scene now for 8 years plus is anti-Trump. And it's, you know, it's chapter and verse. And they, by the way, now they've got their new holy scripture with Michael Wolff and this page turner. Well, all right. We come back. I'll tell you, the 25th Amendment, I want to talk about this, just give you a little perspective on it and play some clips from Alan Dershowitz that were on Fox News today. Very interesting stuff, because I'm telling you, you're going to hear a lot of this 25th Amendment stuff. And I want you to understand what the 25th Amendment is, how it works, right? The law behind it, and why it isn't going to matter a hill of beans, okay? Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC.
Sam Rogowski here for my friend, my attorney, my champion, sweet James Bergner. Now, this is the guy you need to call if you or a loved one have been in an accident, have been hit by a car, a truck, a bus, a mini scooter, I don't know, a clown on a unicycle, bitten by a dog, whatever it is. OK, if you've been hurt, get the right guy in your corner. OK, don't show up with a Pomeranian, bring an Akita. or some other killer thing with big teeth. Sam Rzhovsky here, as I always say, I always stand behind the good stuff. The good stuff is Sweet James. This is the guy you need to talk to. Give him a call. Easy to talk to. Great people. And remember, they will work you through your case so you don't have to do it. So you don't have to worry about making the calls and hassling and negotiating and all that. And by the way, you'll get insurance companies are set up to not do that. They don't want to pay out. They don't want to give you the money that you deserve. You got to fight for it. Make sure you got somebody in your corner to do it. All right. How do you reach him? Super easy. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. All right. Lots going on today. The 25th Amendment. It's been in the news. It is the latest attempt to derail Trump, right? It's starting to look, by the way, like the Mueller investigation is going nowhere fast. In fact, the Mueller investigation, friends, has spurred, has created, has sprouted a lot of other investigations that are ensnaring the left. This is part of the problem. Now, GOP senators have requested a criminal investigation of the Trump dossier author, Christopher Steele. You've got Hillary Clinton now, three or four different investigations that are open into the Clinton Crime Family Foundation and into Clinton's, little suspicious email use. Stuff is happening. And this was all supposed to result in Trump getting impeached, right? I mean, he was supposed to get impeached because Mueller was supposed to find a smoking gun. And so far, all we have is a salacious tell-all book by Michael Wolff, who mysteriously found everything that Mueller didn't, right? I mean, he on his own, by simply yakking it up in the West Wing, was able to get to the truth. If, by the way, if that's true, what the hell are we paying Mueller for? I mean, come on. Anyway, so Trump's not getting impeached. So how else are we going to get rid of him? Well, you're going to get rid of him using the 25th Amendment, of course, which allows for the removal of a president in the event of incapacity. Okay, what is incapacity? How does it work? First of all, it has to be introduced by the vice president. Why? The vice president is, of course, a political ally most of the time of the president. And the reason that it was the 25th Amendment was written the way it was to prevent its abuse. It couldn't be raised by an opponent. It had to be raised by someone that was near and close to the president. Now, the other part of it, then, two-thirds of Congress need to vote on whether or not the removal is to be had, is to be done. And that's also not going to. Two-thirds of the Congress think that Trump is incapacitated. Now, if you believe the book, right, if you believe Michael Wolff, that every one of the people he spoke to, ergo 100% of the Trump White House, thinks that he's lost his mind, you might think that that's realistic. I'm going to tell you right now, here and now, not going to happen. In fact, Alan Dershowitz talks about the 25th Amendment here. Listen to what he says.
25th Amendment is designed for when somebody has a stroke or somebody is unconscious. Perhaps what happened when President Wilson was president and he had a stroke, a serious stroke. It's not designed for differences about a person's emotional makeup. First, the vice president has to invoke it. Second, if the president...
Which would not happen.
No. If the president disputes it, you need two-thirds of both houses of Congress. Forget about it. It would happen only if any president, I'm not talking about a particular one,
right,
had a major psychotic break. Look, we once had a Secretary of Defense. His name was Forrester. He jumped out of the window the Walter Reed Center. He thought the communists were coming after him. He was the Secretary of Defense. Okay, that's a proper basis for removing somebody from office, but not disagreement.
And that's it. And this is all about disagreement with Trump. So this is not going anywhere. If somebody tries to tell you 25th Amendment, Trump's going to get removed from office, he's insane. tell them, you know, to pass what, pass, give me what you're smoking. I want some of it. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
News, talk, evolve. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. All right. I saw something something interesting here. I got to figure out. I just had it in front of me. Did you see this bit about H&M? H&M is the Swedish company. They make clothes. They make reasonably priced clothes that people in suburbia love to wear. Have you heard of, well, I complain sometimes about my own ESL shortcomings. They are in hot water. H&M is in big trouble. And you know why? So they had, they put a picture up on their social media and on their website of a little boy who is black, and he's wearing a shirt that says coolest monkey in the jungle. This is not good. But let me explain to you where this comes from, okay? That reference to some guy designing a sweatshirt in Sweden, it's totally lost on them. That's what this is. Now, Jesse Jackson and social activists and hashtag, you know, the hashtag bandits are all going to make something out of this that it is not. Tomorrow, this will be a huge news story, promise you. In fact, some prominent rapper I've never heard of is already breaking ties with H&M, saying this is the most offensive thing he has ever seen, ever. So, I don't know, probably not, it hasn't seen a lot. But at any rate, all this is, I promise you, some guy who speaks English, don't get me wrong, their English is very good in Scandinavia, most of Sweden certainly. This is not an English problem. This is a reference problem. He understands each one of the words. It just doesn't, I don't think it, I don't know. I promise you, it's a translation, it's some cultural translation problem. Yeah, oh, well, and producer Robbie, you raise a great point. He made the mistake, I'm assuming it's a he, maybe it's a she, they made the mistake because they're not racist. They didn't make that connection. You really think that H&M, a multi-billion dollar company that whatever, you know, 3, 5, 10, 12 people that looked at this all looked at it and goes, you know, this is a great idea. We are going to be really racist today. This is the way our minds work, though. You know, this is, and by the way, this is how the left works, too. They immediately want to jump to this being something that it's, you know, they want to immediately turn every issue into a cause. You know, everything isn't a cause. Sometimes just, you know, things happen. And I'm saying this, you know, as a personal injury lawyer, okay? I mean, sometimes things just happen. Sometimes you get offended and no harm was intended. But liberalism and all these movements and all this stuff that we have, we are literally looking for offense, which is why now touching someone's knee is a sexual assault. Touching the small of someone's back is a rape, almost. That's career ending, certainly. You know, we got to just, as a country, as a people, as humanity, as mankind, we have to just take a chill pill, okay? I mean, thought this, legalizing marijuana is supposed to take care of this. Okay, we're going to be back tomorrow night. All right, we're here every night this week. So tomorrow night, 7 p.m. See you then. Appreciate all of you. Have a great night.